I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
One of my partners and I, we tried so hard to put a schedule together. Like, we were sitting there like, okay, I've been quarantined since this date. And if you were to quarantine until this date, like, then maybe 2 weeks from this date, we could see each other. The protest started, and I was like, we're not going to quarantine and miss protests so we can maybe have sex a month from now.
And one day your kids are like, where were you during the protest?
I was
like,
working on a Google Sheet in bed alone.
Bed alone, Black Lives Matter, but my black sex life matters.
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together, see what it's all about.
Dyking out, dyking out, dyking out, dyking out.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast whose lukewarm takes on queer culture have been stirring up the LGBTQ community for 3 years. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali.
And today we are dyking out with comedian and writer Ashley Ray about solo polyamory. You'll want to stick around for that, because Ashley is just so awesome. She's very funny, cool, keeps it real. We had so much fun talking to her about this topic, and I think that you guys are going to love it too.
Truly the coolest. I have the biggest friend crush on her.
Yes.
After that conversation. And if you don't know her, you will. She's got a lot of projects coming up.
Yeah, a lot of cool stuff happening, and I hope we can collaborate with her somehow again, maybe with an upcoming show or something, which we promise we are working on getting a show going. And just a quick update, if you haven't yet, well, first, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and our Patreon. I know we talk about it a lot. That's what keeps the podcast going, honestly. Patreon.com/dykingout. If it's not up there now, it will be there in a couple of days, I promise. We did an episode episode that's going to be Patreon only with Jess Henderson of our plant episode fame talking about mushrooms, the magic kind, and a whole bunch of other things. And of course, Jess was hilarious and wonderful and kind of scared me a little bit. Not just herself, her experience. So it was...
It's intense.
Yeah, it was not what I expected to hear from her experiences with mushrooms. So it was interesting to hear that. And again, always so much fun to talk to her and hear what she has going on with plants in her life. She's doing a lot of cool stuff. So for $5 a month, you can get access to those types of extra episodes that we do. For $10 a month, you can join our Facebook group, which has been so much fun. And I love everybody on it. Everyone's so fun and cool and nice. And it's like, to me, the happiest little corner of Facebook. I ignore everything else on Facebook except for this group.
The only reason I'm logging on to Facebook.com these days.
For real. And then if you want ad-free episodes and for us to follow you on social media, you can sign up at $15 a month. And then for $20 a month, you get free access to any of our virtual and eventually live events that we have. And also every other month, we're doing a live hangout with our patrons at this level. And September is going to be our first one. So that means that you need to sign up at this level by the end of August with the way that Patreon works to participate in that September hang. Also, you know, we've been diking out for 3 years now, or at least I have.
Yeah.
And I think to celebrate, Melody and I are going to re-record episode one of this podcast.
Yeah, very interesting to see. A lot of people discover diking out and start from the beginning, which I don't tend to do when I discover a podcast, but it's definitely an approach, and we want to kind of give a heads up of what to expect, because it's a lot of confusion for those who do start from the beginning.
Yeah, you know, episode one was something that we did to be like, this is what the podcast is going to be. And obviously there have been a lot of changes, so it wasn't really relevant anymore. So when Melody came on, we took that first episode down. But if you're new and you want to hear it, I will put it up on Patreon as a relic of Diking Out's past. So another reason to join Patreon, why not? And Melody and I are going to re-record and have a new episode one. This is who we are. This is what we're all about. If you're just joining us now, just diking out late in the game, better late than never. And you'll have that waiting for you kind of soon. You know, what is time anymore? Nothing ever seems like it's a dire rush to get done, as we are still in a pandemic, even though people are going back to college. Just seems to be pretending that people aren't still dying at a frightening pace of this. What can you do? Another thing with our listeners, you know, we should have known, Melody, that
we're not going to please everyone. What are you talking about our name? I just...
We're never going to please everyone, but I didn't realize it would be a house so divided between U-Haulers and Diking Otters and neither and the few that still love Susan. But at least I feel like the people who love Susan also understand and are willing to move
forward.
Yeah,
we got some nice messages saying, I understand why you want to change the name. I just love Susan. I don't know, Carolyn. This is all you. You are so type A. You love to name things,
and
I don't know. We got one message that I did agree with. That was like, why do we need a name? you know, I'm fine with being referred to as listener.
Right. You know why we need a name? Because one friend of mine asked me, are you ever going to name your listeners? And I'm so open to suggestion that like right away I was like, oh my God, is that something I should have been doing? Why aren't we doing this? This will be like a really fun thing. And then we could have merch around it. It'll be like a little code thing and people in the community and be like, oh, are you Susan? You know, kind of a girl in red code. I was trying to build a movement here.
I know.
One little seed was planted and I ran away with it. So the objections to U-Hauler, some were saying, well, U-Haul isn't an international company. It's not about the company. It's about the idea of committing fast and hard. And it doesn't have to be with another person, because some people were like, I'm single, so I like diking otters. This isn't about your relationship status. It's about your relationship with us. Your solo polyamorous relationship with both me and Melody.
With us. I just realized that when I came on the podcast as a guest a little over a year ago, you guys were talking about this.
Yeah, I know. That we're a mess, you know. What's more queer than just being super messy and dramatic about things that don't really matter?
And I needing to define what are we
labeling, trying to label ourselves when labels don't mean anything, but they also mean everything. The tagline of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna stick with U-Haulers.
Okay.
I'm calling it. I'm going to put on my ref shirt. I got my referee haircut and saying we're going to stick with U-Haulers. And
we can look into other popular moving companies across this globe. What if people wrote in what's popular in their country and we could make different options?
Oh, my gosh. Well, not.
Or just cut that idea entirely.
Now you're getting into the sect of queerness that's like the super micro labeling. That's like,
yeah,
getting how niche can we get that would also be queer? But, you know, sometimes I'll refer to you folks as U-Haulers. Sometimes I'll refer to you as listeners. Whatever. It's not a big deal. Let's just keep it moving to more important things, like what's going on with Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. We talked about this 2 weeks ago, and then I see it light up on Twitter, and a lot of people seem to be Team Denise Richards. I'm seeing a lot of queer people posting upset that the other housewives were trying to drag her out of the closet.
Pretty much.
Or out her.
Yeah.
And that it was like bullying, like queer bullying, anti-queer bullying, under the guise of like, oh, you're not being honest with us. But also when it comes to things like being queer, there's a difference between being closeted and lying to people. So,
yeah.
Recap us, Melody.
Yeah, I agree that we're watching pretty much a public outing. I'm, for all intents and purposes, I'm Team Denise. People seem to get confused about what that means. If you're Team Denise, do you agree that this didn't happen between her and Brandi Glanville?
Mm.
No, I still believe that they absolutely had sex. I just don't think it's up to the rest of the cast members to make sure she, on the record, comes out with it while she is married to a man and in a crazy custody battle.
Yeah.
With Charlie Sheen. You know, they're only going to use that against her. And these women just don't seem to care. So something interesting happened where Garcelle, my new favorite cast member, was like, well, if we're being honest, like just started pitching questions at Lisa Rinna. Lisa Rinna is the one who's really trying to drag this out of Denise, get her to say it on the record. Also, Denise's actual good friend of like decades. The ladies had a baby shower where Denise was expected to be there. At the last minute, she didn't come because she knew Brandi Glanville was going to be there. So now they're all like, she's clearly lying. It's not that she's sick. Like, of course, yeah, these women, this is like the one storyline of this season. This is why this is my least favorite franchise. They stick to one thing and they drag it out over so many episodes. It's really wild.
You know, you're always saying that the Real Housewives franchise is so gay and that there's so much like queer stuff happening, and now here's something that's like actually super queer, like two women having sex, but it's being handled in like a terrible way that's like ruining somebody's life. So, you know, I, for the sake of all you Housewives fans and all the Real Housewives out there, just go back to your drunk sloppy makeouts and your wine love confessions and your dance floor grinding, you know, just keep it clean, keep it safe for everybody, make it a safe space.
Keep it implied like it was before.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't know. I really do think Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is profoundly boring, especially this season. So I was excited for that shakeup, but I have been binging Real Housewives of Atlanta, and I am on season 3, and it opens up with one of the cast members coming out as bisexual, and nice. We get to see her partner, and maybe because it's 2010, the way the other cast members talk about it is so homophobic, biphobic. I'm interested in seeing how the queerness of that show plays out and if they get better about their vocabulary, because they're just denying that she's even bi. They're shaming her for sleeping with this woman. It's nuts.
I guess some other big things that we should talk about. I don't know. The DNC convention was this week. Democratic wow. National Convention.
What a riot.
Held virtually. That's what's going on in these United States. And I wasn't tuning in, wasn't feeling like it was must-see programming. I did watch AOC because she's my rep and I love her. And she did a procedural nomination of one Bernard Sanders. And
didn't they give her like 1 minute too?
Yeah. Well, I think they gave everybody like that amount of time to say their nomination. But it, you know, it would have been nice if they gave her more time to speak throughout
yeah.
the convention. But that's not, you know, the Democratic Party is not super progressive and still kind of resisting the progressive wing of the party. So instead, they gave a lot of time to Republicans who are anti-Trump, which, you know, I'm not generally excited about any of this. Yeah. So, you know, last week we talked a little bit about people just being so like angry and negative about Kamala Harris and really didn't give an impassioned support of her. Just, you know, maybe we don't need to do this right now. And maybe once she's in office, hold her accountable. And of course, that yeah. was too supportive for some of you.
I really thought we were supporting the concept of voting.
I know. I think we were just like, hey, maybe vote. And this is important because while this isn't what many of us wanted in the end, even though there is just a long list of things wrong with the Democratic Party, it will never match the horror show that is the other side yeah. of the aisle. And then some, what was the tweet? It was just like, ugh.
Ugh, Dyking at supporting Kamala Harris. God, like,
yeah, it was like,
are we really? I'm supporting voting blue, and that's it. It's just a general.
But also, what if we were supporting Kamala Harris, you know, first major party, woman of color, vice presidential nominee who has been, you know, kicking ass in the Senate.
I mean, if anything, we objectify her and we will do better about that.
Yeah, that's the most problematic thing about us and Kamala yeah, Harris.
I couldn't
watch her because I'm like, I will be thinking inappropriate thoughts about her and I don't want to objectify Kamala Harris.
We'll work on that. But it, yeah. honestly, I don't have controversial takes, I don't think, on her. I did check on my Twitter and it looks like 3 years ago I did tweet, Kamala Harris is wife material. Kamala Kamali. Okay?
It has a good ring to it. Kamala Kamali.
I really love it. I got a one whole like, and I will not be deleting it. I just think she's hot, and that's it.
One thing that I want to talk about from the convention that I did watch is that the Chicks, formerly the Dixie Chicks, performed the national anthem, and it was what I thought a great rendition. Again, me speaking as someone who has never been one for country music, but oh man, Natalie Maines gives me, and has been since the beginning, giving me lesbian vibes or queer vibes.
Yeah, I mean,
I know she's recently divorced from a man. I just keep waiting. I'm like, one of these days.
She's giving you queer vibes because that latest album is just a huge fuck you to men. Not just, yeah. you know, the man that cheated on her. But
I mean, didn't that Earl song just speak to all of us?
Yeah. Cool. Now someone's going to email us about being gay bullies again. And listen, It's just a pretty queer album to me. And they're best friends with Fortune Feimster, so we love that. We're counting it as gay culture.
Yes.
The album rules. I don't even listen to country music. I have a girlfriend who loves it, and it's been playing a lot in our apartment, and it's really good. Gaslighter. That's inherently queer or, like, political, because they were gaslighted by the fucking USA.
Yeah.
How many years ago? But I know it's about the ex who cheated on her, gaslit her, but, you know, it can be applied to a lot.
Some of the commentary I really liked about them performing at the DNC, it was like, oh, the only speakers who were against the Iraq war are the only, like, representation for people who are against the war in Iraq and the Democratic Party. Yeah. Bernie Sanders and the chicks were the two people in...
This is our true representation.
I don't know. What's the gayest thing you did this week?
Listen, I mean, I did a really gay thing. I did a really gay thing this week. I participated in the first ever Iranian Pride event.
Yes.
They've never had Pride, and they'll not for a long time have an in-person kind of parade. It's severely illegal to be gay in Iran, but I was reached out to by this organization called Shishreng, which translates to six colors, which is essentially the pride flag. And they put on a virtual pride. They had participants from all over the world. It happened on Friday, the 21st. Tried to catch as much as I could because it was like early in the morning, which was evening in Iran. But they're releasing the videos from it. And so far, it's really cool to see trans Iranians, gay Iranians, Iranians all over the world, basically just showing their solidarity. I did a pre-taped kind of talk where my mom was on FaceTime on my laptop and I was recording myself via my phone. So I just wanted her there in case because I gave the little speech in Farsi and I was like, just kind of shout out if I messed up a word because I've been so out of practice with my Farsi. And then I thought to spring it on my mom to grab my laptop and hold it up to the computer. I was like, you want to say something? And she gave a really heartfelt little speech and she got choked up and she started to cry and it's the sweetest thing I've ever seen. So that is the gayest thing.
I was getting choked up when you were telling me about it. I was getting emotional and
I'll post it.
Your mom just keeps scoring so many points. She is truly, wish she was all our moms.
Yeah, and that's what she says in the video. I was like, just can you tell them all that you'll be their surrogate mom if they need one? And I think that got to her because she started to talk and immediately started to cry.
Well, now I'm about to cry. My eyes are covered with tear water.
Yeah, I can also, I'll post that, but I could also post yesterday. I took Allie to get an endoscopy and she was sedated and FaceTiming me from the doctors. They're like, you're really not good enough to leave yet. And she's just like, just let me go. My girlfriend's here. Please let, like, they were like, who's here with you? Who's outside with you? Because they wouldn't let us go in. We had to wait outside for.
Yeah, because of COVID and stuff.
Yeah. Also interesting, literally everyone in this medical office had a mask on except for the receptionists who were the ones interacting with people the most. So ridiculous.
That's crazy. I haven't seen that yet. I've been to some doctor's appointments and
they had them under their chin.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And screaming and, you know, talking to everyone else who was complying and wearing a mask. And then they were a little homophobic. They said, who's here with you? And Allie was like, my girlfriend, she's outside. And they're like, okay, what's his name? And she's like, it's a she. And it's my girlfriend. So I think that was planted in her head because once she was drugged up, she just kept talking about how much she loved her girlfriend. and then on the ride
That'll
back,
show
I'll edit together a video of all the footage I took. It is Allie just crying over how much she loves me. That one point she goes, I just love watching Housewives with you. I love watching anything with you. I love you so much. And what if people don't have someone to pick them up and just sobbing at how, like, at the thought of someone doesn't have a melody to pick them up. Very sweet. Okay. Well, what about you? What'd you do? What was the gayest thing you did this last week?
The gayest thing I did this last week. Well, I had a dream last night where I was talking to some random lesbian about the show South of Nowhere, and that felt very gay. I haven't watched South of Nowhere in a while, but I guess it's sitting happily in my subconscious, and that is my go-to conversation starter for Dream Carolyn. The other thing is, if you'll indulge me in talking a little bit more about house hunting, there was a property upstate that came with a storefront attached to it that was a soap store, and COVID closed down the soap store and they sold the business. So now this house with a storefront is open, and I pitched to Cecilia, what if we got this and I make a tea shop? It's on like this little, I'm like, I can do Dyking Out still from there and then have this tea business. And
feeling inspired from the Jen Richards episode.
I was feeling inspired from the Jen Richards episode. I mean, at first I said, I can learn to make soaps. I could make a sapphic soap shop.
There's your name.
So desperate to get out of the city that I'm considering a retail career, something I have zero experience in, making soaps or selling tea. But I will do what it takes in these times. So yeah, still I think the dream is gayer, but I'm going to say you're the gay champion of the week, and I'm so thrilled that you are part of that event, Melody, and it fills my heart every time I see a Persian listener or a Persian queer online who feels seen through you being on the podcast and talking about your life and your culture and your family, and it's so important, and knowing the way that things are in Iran for queer people.
My heart goes out. And
yeah,
I don't know. They found me through that event. I'm getting so many Iranian gays finding me online, and then they can listen to this podcast and feel less alone. I don't know. I was.
Yeah, I hope.
A last minute thing I got asked to do this last week. And after just weeks of heavy depression, finally felt like I was at least doing something positive.
Yeah, that's my hope with Dyking Out, is that it makes people feel less alone. But some people like being alone sometimes, and they like the time that they have to themselves, and they don't necessarily want to commit to partnering with someone.
No, I've heard of that.
Solo polyamory. So today we are diking out with comedian and writer Ashley Ray about solo polyamory. Not sure what that is? You're going to learn about it in just a minute. Ashley has been featured in Vulture, Elle, The Guardian, The AV Club, and we're so happy to be talking with her today, and hopefully can right our past wrongs on the topic of polyamory, as we are now older and wiser. We hope. Melody wasn't here for our polyamory episode. I don't know if it was episode four, I believe.
It was really early, yeah.
It wasn't really a conversation about polyamory. Thank God the emails have stopped about it. Got a lot of emails that were like, you guys are really wrong about, nothing you talked about is really polyamory. Again, older, wiser. I was just a big dummy back then. And still, always have so much to learn. I learned so much in this conversation. What do you say? Should we get into it?
Let's do it.
Tell our listeners a little bit about your background, about yourself, your comedy, your writing, just so they get a feel for who you are before we dive in.
Yeah, I am a writer, comedian, started, it's super embarrassing, but I actually, my performance career started in high school with spoken word. So that was sort of my original background. I think from that you could tell, always very gay. I was the girl who was like in the spoken word thing, being like, love is love, so don't tell me what, you know, like doing that. And when I went to college, I was like, obviously spoken word, gonna keep doing this. I joined like a spoken word group, and I just kind of realized, like, I started competing and just got tired of how kind of corny it was. I would do these poems that, I mean, I liked writing jokes. I liked being funny and performing. And I would be like, oh, this is like a funny part. And people would just come up after and be like, oh my God, that was so sad about your dad dying. Like, oh my God, I just wanted to cry for you. And I would just be like, I just like the part where I make you laugh.
That's how you know you're a comedian, is when you really like to laugh at the trauma in your life.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I know it's sad. Like, my dad died, whatever. But like, let's get to the jokes here, you guys. And so from there, I kind of started pivoting to writing more comedy. I started working at The Onion back in like 2016, just doing like stand-up shows all around Chicago, started doing open mics. My first was at Kohl's, which was famous with Rebecca O'Neill, Sarah Sherman at the time were running it. And they just like put together this like great environment for women, for gay women. I think Chicago open mics were very like male heavy before that. And Kohl's was like this place where they were like, we're going to have female hosts. And if a woman comes, she's going up first. We don't care. So that was like how I kind of realized like, oh, I can make a place for myself in comedy. Like Black women can do this. I don't need to be like some queer spoken word girl. Like I can just be like a funny stand-up comedian. Oh, and I write, I'm a freelance writer. Probably what you know me for is that I write for the AV Club and Vulture and The Guardian and Elle, mostly about TV, movies, and also just my crazy life as a polyamorous queer person. Yeah, so I do all of that.
Yeah, how long have you been polyamorous? Is that a question? when did you realize?
Yeah, people are always kind of like, it's so new, right? Like, are you trying that like within the last year? But I actually have been poly since I was like 18 years old, which is rare within the poly community, people as old and wise as me. But the way that I kind of came to it is that I was a very pretentious child. I was an asshole. And I like to read like Simone de Beauvoir and like, you know, all of this just like existentialist shit that made like, I just thought I was like so deep. Like I watching Mar Bergman movies, like you fucking High School Musical kids don't get me. And that is a gateway drug to polyamory, is just being an asshole. But for me, it was very much like my mom was a single mom. I never like really saw strong kind of like father figures, or, you know, my mom was in this like long distance relationship with my stepdad. So I was always like, oh, you can love someone and they don't have to like be there all the time. And you can like love multiple people. And actually for women, that can be really empowering when we live in this like patriarchal society that says, you know, uses monogamy as a tool against us. So in the beginning, I was just kind of like looking for partners who were cool with different sort of variations of monogamy. My first like serious relationship, we were both queer. He was like this bisexual guy. I was bi. We both kind of clicked and we were like, we could get married, but it would be like a spiritual marriage where like you travel and I travel and we have lovers all over the world and country and this will be beautiful. And so that was like my first like 4-year relationship.
It's a good pitch.
Yeah, I was like, this makes sense. And like, I was going to college. He was like staying in my hometown. And I was like, right, duh. Like, I'm going to go to college and learn so much. And like, we'll be in love. It was dumb. It's stupidity is another way people often fall into polyamory. and this all, I think, is like kind of the typical way people do it. Like, you're in a relationship and you want to make it work and you guys decide to like be open. So that was like my initial foray. But I would say after graduating college, after breaking up with that guy, our perfect poly engagement did not work out. We broke up.
Oh, so you never got married?
Yeah, we didn't get married. We were engaged for like 3 years. And then in the end, he was like a crazy meth addict. And I was just like, why do I deal with this? Like, we don't even live in the same state. Like, I date all these other people who aren't putting me through this. So then I moved to Chicago. And that was kind of, I think, my real like awakening as a poly person, where I kind of was like on my own, single, setting the terms of my relationships myself. And I was like, I know this is who I am. Like, going forth on OkCupid, that's what we used back in the day, back in 2013. Mm-hmm. On OkCupid, just being like, I'm poly, I'm owning this, this is how I want to date. So I would say like 7 years is the real like putting in the work, teaching the people, being about it.
And then was it ever since your relationship with your ex fell apart, is that when you realized that solo polyamory was a thing for you? Or was, I don't know, solo polyamory, the first time I heard that term was through your Guardian article that I read about being solo polyamorous during the pandemic, which I recommend all our listeners read that.
Yeah, it's interesting, I guess, because most people don't think about solo poly as like even a form of polyamory. They're mostly just like, so mm-hmm. you're single and you're slutty or something, or you're single and you like, you just cheat on people or something. They, like, they don't really want to question it. And also it doesn't help that like polyamory is this ever evolving blob. And especially yeah. with the internet, there are so many little communities with like different names for things that are the same thing. Like originally people would say that I was a relationship anarchist, which sounds so badass.
Yeah. Like,
oh, that's like the coolest thing, because polyamory, it's lame. It sounds lame and I'm embarrassed when it comes up mostly, like, but like when I'm like, yeah, I'm a relationship anarchist, that's like, oh, wow, what's that?
But no, it's further questions.
Yeah, it's like the same thing. So solo polyamory is where you don't really believe in relationship structures. Traditional mm-hmm. polyamory people go, oh, I have my primary, this is my secondary yep. partner, and so on and so on. Or maybe they go, you know, this is my partner that I see primarily when I'm here, and this is my permanent partner when I see when I live in this place. With solo polyamory, it's kind of about allowing relationships to develop on their own terms. I have friendships that, you know, to me, we define it as a friendship, and other people might look at it and say, you guys are basically dating, this is a relationship. But for us, what we kind of define as a relationship and a friendship is very different. For me, it's like, we can travel together and have sex all day long, but if I'm not taking you home to meet my mom, that's not necessarily a relationship. But then I also know there are people that I'm dating, and they're going to say, I want to know your family. I want to know you on that level. And so then it's me kind of going, okay, where am I comfortable giving that with some people and where am I not? And how can we have different relationships? So it sounds super complicated, but it's really just dating people. It's yeah. just dating people and letting them, instead of sort of rushing into these labels of, oh, well, we're boyfriend, girlfriend now because we've done this. Or, oh, should we have a conversation about being steady? Or should we have a conversation about defining things because we've been together for this long? And instead, it's about just sort of saying, what do you want from this relationship? And what do you want from relationships in general? What's your love language? How do I affirm you as someone that I care about and want to affirm and help? And I love it. I feel like I have friends who help guide my career and who I love deeply, and they love me too. And I do have boyfriends and I have girlfriends and I have people who I just consider partners, people who I date, who I just kind of, it's nebulous where like people are like, oh, that's your person in your life. And for me, that's what kind of works. But I am not someone who requires sort of that normal stability of like, this is my primary, we have our rules. I like to kind of set the boundaries individually with myself and with my partner. So there are times where I'll be like, hey, we've just started dating. And if the person is, you know, more comfortable with us being monogamous for a period of time, being solo poly kind of allows me to do that, to say, hey, I'm just going to like see this person for like 3-4 months, see how we click and how we are together. Versus if I had a primary where it's kind of like, oh no, I can't really invest that sort of one-on-one time with you because I do have a primary that I'll be like seeing and, you know, obviously needing to give attention to. So for me, that was kind of one of the biggest differences. And I also found myself in a lot of situations where like I was dating someone who had a primary and I hated being called a secondary. I hated this sort of like elevator style, like you're not a fucking king and this is not a monarchy or whatever. Like we're not your president. Right. You get to like line up. I hate that whole idea of it. So for me, being solo poly is about breaking that down.
I mean, that's very understandable to not like those terms. And from friends I know who are polyamorous or have been in polyamorous relationships, it seems like a lot of the conflict that comes into the relationships is from this primary, secondary, or they were in a relationship and now one of them wants to change their primary over to the secondary. And then the yeah. other primary was like, what the fuck? I thought, what's the point of having a primary?
What's the point?
If you're going to change
it. Honestly, God bless polyamorous people with primaries because I couldn't do it. I mean, I know one guy that I was seeing him, and as we started seeing each other, he was very much into the, I want you to be my secondary and my wife is my primary and I want to have a third. And I was like, nope, I'm opting out. This is not good. And also your primary like doesn't know that that's how you view it. A lot of times a primary goes, I am your number one and you see other people, but you're not going to care about them as much as you care about me ever. You know, whereas that other person is like, no, I want a harem of like other women yeah. I will take care of. Like that is my second wife. So that's something that they often have to figure out. And in that case, he like ended up dating like other people. At the end of the day, when I talked to him last, he was like, I'm in group therapy with both of my wives. They're in therapy together. And then I do one-on-one therapy with each of them. And then I do my own therapy session. And that's, I think, when you're doing polyamory wrong, it shouldn't cause that much therapy. I mean, it's definitely not easy, but if you're like going to the therapist four times because of your multiple partners, you might want to like break things down differently.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think a lot of the issues is that, you know, people, again, they want to kind of rush into a label or an idea of something, and they don't think through the steps of, well, what does it actually mean to be a primary to you? And what does it mean to me? And solo polyamory is always about starting anything, any conversation from that initial sort of point of view is, what does this mean to you? And what does this mean to me? Even if it's the most basic of terms, you sit down and you go, so when I say I'm your friend, here's what I mean. And when I say I love you, this is what it means. And, you know, is that if I say I love you and it means this, is that okay with other people you're dating who you say I love you to? So it's just, I think people think it's a lot of like sexy hotness, and it's just a lot of like very aggravating conversation.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of talking.
It's a lot of talking. Like it's, and I do also date like kind of a lot of long distance people. So a lot of times people, and especially during the pandemic, people are just like, wow. So it's like really not about sex. It's really like about human connection. And it's like, yeah, yeah. Look at that.
Yeah. So you have to lay that out right from the start then. Has that ever like tripped up a relationship where you've had someone be like, can we just kind of like feel this out? Or?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always really upfront about it because I mean, there's no point in like kind of holding it back at this point. And I also feel like, I mean, people are going to follow me online or whatever. They're going to see that I talk about it. So it usually comes up. And I do feel like dating women and non-binary people, they are way more understanding. They already usually like have experience like being in maybe like non-traditional relationships or like seeing non-traditional relationship structures. But then men are dumb. And sadly, I still give cis men the time of day. And that's when I've noticed like the biggest problems come up is that they're the ones who tend to stereotype what poly women are like, or why a woman would want to be poly. That's when they start to kind of do this like man brain thing where they like feel like they need to mansplain my sexuality to me. And they're like, it must be because you have a bad relationship with your dad. Or, oh, it must be because actually you do want to be monogamous with me, but you think that you're going to trick me into being monogamous with you by saying you don't want to be monogamous with me. So you're actually lying about what you want. And that's when it, like, I get tripped up in relationships and people, I'm just like, no, this is what it is. Like, you can go do this. And that's usually when I give up.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a good line from your Guardian article about just like, yeah, men are stupid.
Why would I want to date more than one? I mean, it was sad enough. I mean, the guy that I was engaged to, he was actually like the first man that I ever dated. I had only dated girls before that. I'm like, I don't know, I guess one of those like reverse, I'm like,
me too.
Yeah. Like reverse little lesbian story. I was very like, yeah, I was like very gay always growing up. Like all my cousins were always like, I would talk to my friends and they'd always be like, when we were playing like kids growing up and we played Spice Girls, like they'd always make me be Scary Spice cause I was black. But for me, they would always make me be Sporty Spice cause everybody knew I was gay. Like they were just like, you're the tomboy one. Like, come on. Nobody's like, we all see what's going on here. Like you're the boy one. And so it wasn't until like, I was like 16, 17 that I started dating that guy and was like, oh my gosh, I guess like I can give men a shot. Like I'm bi. Yeah. I'm not just gay. Like I thought from watching the L Word since I was 12 years old, like, wow, I guess. Huh. So I don't know. It's just been a constant disappointment to me that it worked and that I still like, you know, but I guess I try to mostly date queer guys. I guess that helps.
Yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
That's what I know too from people in my life, and obviously I operate in like a pretty queer space nowadays, but that a lot of people I know who are polyamorous and who identify as women, the men that they seem to find the most success with in terms of having these relationships are queer or bisexual cis men.
Yeah. It's like they're the ones who typically get it. You know, I think another one of those like stereotypes that men often throw on you when they see that you're like solo poly and also bisexual is of course the unicorn phrase, the unicorn label, which, you know, I think every solo poly bi girl should have their own periods of claiming that term and throwing it away in disgust whenever you want. That's up to you. Everyone has that journey. I spent many years of my life being a proud unicorn. Now you would have to pay me a lot of money to do it. But like, that's one of those things where men are always sort of like, well, they're going to think like, what do I get out of this? And so you're just here to be a sex toy for me and this other woman that is my primary. And that's something I've run into. Like, I've actually had men say like, oh, you're like a sex toy. Like, it's so fun. And that's where it's like, oh no, I'm a human being and this is gross. Yeah. But queer guys, like bi guys, obviously get that too. Like, they also like are in this sort of back and forth position where I think that's also sort of put on them in a way.
Yeah.
So I think they get it. Like, you don't want to see your sexuality like turned into someone's like toy or plaything. So I don't know. I'm kind of always upfront about like being queer and gay friendly. And I find that keeps a lot of the assholes away. Like, they're just kind of, they opt out when I like put too many rainbow flags, because they're just like, no, I was just kind of looking for a fun weekend thing for me and my girlfriend. We're not trying to be like gay for real. So.
Right. When you say that, it makes me think that some people maybe that they have an open relationship, but they're not really polyamorous, but then they don't understand polyamory themselves. So they're going after openly polyamory people and just using them as like a third.
Yeah.
Right? Is that a thing that happens?
Oh, that's absolutely a thing. I mean, relationships are hard. Poly, monogamous, whatever you want to do, relationships are hard. And I think often polyamory is used as a tool by people who are facing frustrations in their relationship, who have a million other issues in their relationship than, you know, the fact that they're monogamous. But they think, oh, if we do this, if we open, it'll get better. And they usually don't actually understand polyamory or how it works. They really are just like looking for some other type of fulfillment or to answer other questions in their relationship. And then they want to bring you into it. Early on, I think like those are the horror stories I hear from so many people who are like, I tried polyamory. I went on a date with this guy from OkCupid. He lied to his girlfriend about this, this, and this. And then he said he wanted to break up with his girlfriend and be with me. And it's like, yeah, I've heard this story a million times because you got caught up in some guy who was like using a term so he could like manipulate his girlfriend into doing what he wanted. And that's 100% real. And I love holding those dudes accountable in the poly community because we have to. But I do think some people like let that draw their entire experience of polyamory. They're like, no, that's all it can be is like people lying for their own fulfillment and their own joy. And, you know, it's all about what they want. And that it really isn't the case.
And that's where we went wrong on this podcast with the first episode that we tried to do on polyamory, because we had this super funny comedian, love her to death, Chewy May. And Chewy came on and had just been through this experience where it was her first experience with what she thought was polyamory.
Yeah.
And it was a woman who was seeing both her and this other guy. And then the woman was like, never mind, I'm not polyamorous anymore. I'm just with this guy. I'm like, it doesn't sound like it was really a polyamorous thing to begin with.
Yeah, no. That
so how are we talking about this?
And that's like, and that's, I think, one of those things where, and you learn it, sort of like how you learn to date in general, like what questions to ask, what flags to look out for. And now I'm at this point where like on a first date, I am just like, so how long have you been poly? And honestly, I don't really date people who don't have poly experience at this point, but like it's asking those questions of, why did you and your partner decide to be poly? And how do you guys define that? And I like to throw in hypotheticals, like, let's say, you know, I wanted to take a trip with you. Is that something your partner would be comfortable with? And that is a simple thing that you can ask on a first date. Like, it's exciting. Like, oh, let's say hypothetically we got along and I wanted to take you to Palm Springs for a weekend. Would your partner be cool with that? And it's one of those questions where I have seen people go, oh my God, I've never thought about it. Like, I've never asked her. We've never talked about it. And that's when I realized like, oh, this is a couple that really hasn't dug into polyamory. They aren't asking these they're not having these conversations. They're not asking these questions. And I am not about to sit here and be the person who figures that out for them. You know, if you want to pay me to figure it out for you, let's all sit down and chat. But like,
I feel like there might be a market for that. I think that's like a side hustle is like polyamorous, consulting.
Consulting.
I mean, I am an ex-sex worker. When I lived in Chicago, I did sex work. And a big part of that was being a unicorn for pay for couples, which like really just turned into me routinely seeing like three couples that would just like, they were literally like, it is like therapy when we see you, Ashley, like our weekly session with you really is like so healing. And like, we feel so connected and you help us refine that connection between each other. Because a lot of it is, I am frankly people who are willing to actually have a legitimate threesome where they actually pay a sex worker instead of just like, you know, finding a unicorn on Tinder and being gross about it.
Yeah. Right.
People usually are like having more open conversations and they really, you know, aren't just trying to like bring someone in the bedroom because like Cosmo told them it would be cool to have a threesome. It's more about like a deeper experience for them. So I like that situation. And I liked kind of being there to be like, okay, like, here's how you can sort of balance the energies of a threesome. Because I think threesomes are a thing people have to learn. You're not sort of built with the inherent knowledge of how to have sex with two people at once.
Amen.
It's, yeah, you know, I hear the threesome horror stories and I just want to be like, you just need a guide. You just need a guide. and it can really, you know, if the communication is there, it can be great. So You know, I think that, again, just kind of also gets into the tricky area of people are like, polyamory, it's all about threesomes and group sex. And it's like, it can be, yes. It can, and it's awesome. But that still comes with like the same sort of burdens and responsibilities that like any sex have. You really need to just like be working in like 4D when it comes to like consent and what people are happy with. It's not just like the fun of like the guy that you met on OkCupid who, or like, you know, the girl who is like, oh, I just like have always like wanted to kind of try girls. But my boyfriend said that if we're going to be open, I can only date girls. So like, you know, this is my chance to experiment.
I have some of those friends.
Yeah, that to me is, I've lost friends because I hate that. And I'm very vocal about being like, oh, so your partner's a misogynist.
Yeah, right.
Really. I have a friend who's allowed to have sex with me.
Oh, but like, great. Oh,
only if he's like doing shows and is gone for the weekend.
Oh, how thank you, dear benevolent master,
so
for
gross.
Granting me your girlfriend's pussy while you're gone.
Yeah,
it just, I hate that version of open relationships. I think it is so demeaning to women. I also think like I have stolen a number of women from their partners. Don't think I'm not a threat. Don't think
right.
Be a threat to your relationship, because we can be. Like we can steal your girl just as easily as some guy can. So I hate that version of it. And of course, there's never any stipulation like, can he only sleep with guys? Like, no, it's always just this very unfair thing that I think a lot of girls agree to, because I honestly don't know why you'd agree to that. But I am a girl who dates girls, so I don't know. The idea of just having that be exclusive doesn't feel like a special treat to me, I guess. Like, it's just like, you can just date girls and also date the guys you want to date if you want.
Yeah, so, get out of there. You'd mentioned the poly community earlier. How do people find them? Is that just online spaces at this point?
Yeah. And honestly, poly community, the way that I use it, I mostly don't think that that is like a real entity. I don't like sort of want to even try to claim any sort of poly community, just because there are so many like bad faith actors who use polyamory.
Mm. Yeah.
I also think that a lot of times the first thing that like comes to people's mind is like burlesque. And like burlesque shows, and I don't know, like magic shows, like gross, like people who wear fedora hats. That's like what people think of when they think of polyamory. So I think if I am myself and I talk openly about polyamory, I can like break down those stereotypes and be like, no, we don't all do burlesque. We don't care about like musical comedy. Like, no, we can be poly and still be cool and dress nice and like have
That's so funny to me.
I just like
that is what I picture. Like sometimes, like this burlesque.
There's like that guy who's like, oh, he's a comedian. He's so funny. Chris something. He has a song that's like about polyamory, and it's like literally the video in the song is just like a gross looking guy with a fedora and like a girl with like a turtleneck and like a weird half cut, and it's just like. Literally, like, it's like, just because I have bad hair doesn't mean that I'm polyamorous. Like, just because I like to put puzzles together doesn't mean I'm polyamorous. Like, just because I like Radiohead. And those are, you know, stereotypes of the term. And I am aware of them because I will actively work against them. I want to reclaim it as something that can be black and cool.
Yeah.
And not just in a way where it's like Hotepy, where like black guys are like, these are my two queens and they serve me and my household. That's another kind of very popular form of polyamory, where it's like a guy and like all of his girlfriends who make out. That is, again, something I would like to break down. I'd like to see more people like me, just normal people with like a few casual relationships and some serious relationships.
Right. I think that there's just so many different perceptions of polyamory, because it kind of like reflects whatever circle you run in and the one polyamorous person in that circle and what their experiences are, you know?
Yeah.
So if you only have like one friend who's polyamorous and they're just like
the worst at it.
Yeah. Or they're having like it's very focused on sex and threesomes and you know, just like playing with gender and sexuality, and they're like constantly you're like, how do you have time for all these things going on? And for a while, I had a friend, and I'm like, that was my perception of it. I was like, polyamory is like super intense.
Yeah. I always get the like, I don't want to have to manage a Google Calendar to date.
Right. Do you know the comedian Robbie Hoffman?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Robbie has this great polyamory joke about the scheduling thing, and she's like, these polyamorous people, they're not judges. They're not working jobs that require a lot of hours. You can't be a doctor and be polyamorous. You don't have the time for it.
Well, I mean, I have dated some lawyers. I do find actually that those people are the ones who are like really good at it. Like actually it's a little surprising because the best people at polyamory are the really traditional people who are like usually do have a primary. I mean like your Will and Jada's. Like everyone knows secretly their marriage is open. Like they want to act like it's not, but everybody knows they're actually open and like they're totally discreet and they know they have their boundaries, their rules. They've been doing it for a long time. You know, they know their date nights. They're like, I see my other partner on Tuesdays and Thursdays and I work. And those are the relationships that are great to get into. They're hard to find, like the actual legit, just kind of like, yeah, we're married and we've been open for like 20 years couples. But when you find one, just, you know, lock it in, lock it in.
I feel like a lot of that must exist in Hollywood and with celebrities and stuff. But then the other side of it is...
That's what you want to think. Everyone wants to think like, oh, polyamory, no, it's like this thing that only like famous people do. But you would be shocked like at some of the like couples and interests that I would see is just people who are like, yeah, I teach at this school or like, yeah, I work at a grocery.
Right.
I want to see the Boise community.
Yeah. I mean, I also do tell people when they're like, oh, I just moved somewhere. There are like poly meetup groups that are like, you know, they're there. A lot of people like to use FetLife, but that to me is a
little... I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, I did the FetLife wave for a bit, but to me, I mean, it's so strictly kind of sexual.
Is right. that an app for the square in the room here?
FetLife fetish. It's been around forever. I actually know about it through Becca O'Neill.
Yeah, they actually don't have an app. That's how old FetLife is.
Yeah.
It's just a website, and it's like,
okay.
The graphic design is literally
it has
like,
not been updated.
Has not been updated since like a live journal. Like it is.
Okay, it's like a GeoCities space.
Like very basic HTML, and it's just like, chat groups, but it's like the real fetish people, like the people who are like, I cannot share this on OkCupid because it would be a shame to my family if anyone found this about me. But it also is like where people are just like, hey, I'm poly and like me and my girlfriend want to do this, or like, hey, we're going to do this. So I think if the sex aspect is a big part of it, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, I definitely have had stages throughout my polyamory where I'm just like, this is about me just sort of indulging in my pleasure center. Yeah, let's do this. That FetLife is great for that. But if you want relationships with like people, it's a lot harder to find that amongst the like sea of people in leather masks on that website.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no dedicated like app for it. And it feels like there couldn't be without it being co-opted.
Yeah. And it's like, anytime I would like meet someone, I'd give them like a fake phone number, like a Google Voice number. Cause I was like, I just don't feel comfortable with you having my real number.
Yeah.
Like there's just something so like skeevy about the platform.
Yeah.
You're just like, is everyone on here a cop that's like trying to bust someone? It's weird.
I'm not going to lie. I went on a date with a guy who's bisexual like years back in Chicago. We went on a couple dates. We had sex. And then afterwards, he asked me if he could show me his FetLife. And like, for some reason, I just immediately got like less and less attracted to him. Like the more he talked about how much he loved FetLife. Like,
I mean, if you use it, okay. But like being really into it seems a little, I mean, I guess there are like, I would kind of like when I would use it, there were like, I think points or like competitions of like sexy videos. Like,
yeah,
I guess that is a community. That is a legit community.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. All respect to the FetLife community.
Yeah. No disrespect. It was I don't know. They need like better UX. They need a UI designer. Yeah, they need more contours to their graphics.
Yeah, every time I'm on it, I just want to be like, can someone turn a light on? Can we just make it a little, we have to do this like we're whispering. Like, can we just, it just is the worst. Like, and like the way that it's to do, like, if you want to bold stuff, you have to do like old school HTML. It just feels like secret codes you're sending. And really you're just trying to be like, oh, cool. Are you poly too? It's
cool. Yeah.
In terms of explaining polyamory to people in your family or if like other people, you know, again, based on my limited experience, my friends' moms do not understand it and do not. Yeah. They're just like waiting for this phase to be over when it's clearly not a phase. And it's friends who are like, you know, in their mid 30s, they've figured it out. They've arrived and they're like, this finally makes sense. This is who I am. And their moms are like, just wait till baby fever happens or whatever it is.
Yep, you know? That's my mom. She's very much like, oh, the second you want a baby, you're going to realize you need one person in your life. But I did just like straight up come out to my mom as like poly. Also bisexual, because at the time she was very like, I don't understand. You had a lot of female friends in high school and now you see this guy. So I just like, I called her and was like, I'm bisexual, I'm polyamorous.
It's usually the other way. It's like, you had all those boyfriends in high school. How could you be gay?
How could this be? And she was just like, those weren't friends in high school. Oh my God, you had so many sleepovers. And I was like, yeah, they were all gay.
I call them attachments, but.
Yep. But I just came out and told her. And at first she was just kind of like, oh, so like you're a slut. Like she didn't get it. She was just kind of like, that's just a thing men say so they can get more pussy. And I was like, I'm getting more pussy than any man I'm dating. And she was like, don't ever say that to me. And then she hung the phone up. She was like, I don't, oh my gosh. And then she just hung up. And now
and that was on Mother's Day.
No. And that was my gift to her. It was all the pussy I've been getting.
The gift of truth.
Yeah. And like now she kind of gets it more. Like she understands, like if I'm talking to someone, she'll be like, oh, is that a friend? She just calls anyone I date like a friend. So she's like a little more that I feel is like caring, that she isn't just like, is this a boyfriend? Are you going to marry him? What's the deal? Like she kind of used to be, but she still, I think expects like, I think she thinks like, oh, this girl's going to hit like 10 years from now and like have a baby and be like married. And I think she's just going to be like, I don't understand. Like you have a kid with someone who has a, like another partner and you guys all like raise it in a, like a commune or something.
Like you need a tribe
yeah.
to raise a kid. And that actually sounds.
That's what I tell her. I'm like, you always told me I needed a tribe to raise a child. Yeah. So I'm building one. Kind of.
You inspired this.
Yeah. Like, thanks. It's all actually your fault.
Yeah. I wonder how that plays out. I mean, I guess, you know, to each their own and everybody figures out a way to make it work. But with having kids, if you want to be solo polyamorous, I mean, I know people who are solo monogamous, but single and they choose to have kids. So like, why should being polyamorous be, you know, any different?
Yeah. And it, I mean, it's interesting because at the same time, I rarely date people with kids, but that's just like a personally me, I'm not in a place where I'm trying to be around or involved with like, anybody's kid, but like, I do know poly people with kids and it's just kind of, you know, another thing they work out that, you know, they have to sort of work together to figure out like, how are we going to co-parent this child and explain to them like our situations. But to me, I don't know, that's never seemed crazy to me when like my life was like my dad lived in a different state with like his wife and I lived with my mom. So it was always kind of like, yeah, families can look like a lot of things. So
right. Yeah.
What, who cares if like my mom has like a girlfriend and a boyfriend and like does this and like that's all my family.
Is there any like good media representation poly?
God no. Yeah, probably we have like god, we have like nothing that is a good representation. I mean, like Insecure tried really hard. They like had Dro Molly dated a poly guy and it was bad because they'd never talked about the boundaries and expectations of their relationship. Yeah, I can't even, I feel like there are some on some like major networks, but I feel like it's always like a either trying to find someone for a threesome type story or like, I guess there is a escaping polygamy.
Oh my God. That's actually on our list. My girlfriend and I are obsessed with My Five Wives. Oh, all yeah. the,
so yeah. I mean, I guess there are all of those shows, the like the yeah. like My Three Sister Wives, but I don't really count those. Right. I mean, yes, they all fall under this giant umbrella that is polygamy.
Yeah.
But those shows, I mean, obviously they're reinforcing this idea of a patriarchy where you are, you know, under a man who has multiple partners. So I do love shows like Escaping Polygamy because it kind of shows to me like the biggest difference between polyamory and polygamy, which people often like conflate together too. And yeah, polygamy is scary and it can be a very dangerous thing that is used against women and against children to keep them in abusive situations. So I think that's why it's really important that we have to be like clear about this language and about these terms and the differences, because, you know, that was a big thing in Utah. They were trying to make polygamy legal and they tried to paint it as this very like, well, if gay people can get married, like you should allow poly people to like marry as many people as we want. And it's like, no, that wasn't like queer poly people who were trying to align with Mormons. That was Mormons who were like, we want to not get in trouble when we beat our children and wives.
Right. So,
and I want to have multiple wives. So, you know, that to me is like, yeah, watch those shows to really kind of understand the difference. But when it comes to like cool polyamory people, I don't know. I feel like we get like, and like a plot in High Maintenance or something, like there will be a high maintenance character right. who's like ordering weed. And then she's like, these are my husband's. And you're like, oh, there it is.
Yeah. We just have vignettes for now.
Yeah. It's just like a like little character, like character pieces of like, oh, mm-hmm. but yeah, I think we'll probably see like a male poly character. And I mean, that probably exists, just a guy who dates a lot of women and like doesn't believe in monogamy. That's like basically Don Draper, right?
Right.
But like when it comes to like female characters who are poly, people just have such a hard time sort of grasping female polyamory that I feel like any TV show that tries to do that, like the woman is automatically painted as like this villain and like anti-hero and stuff, where it's like, oh my god, she's a cheating whore. So, you know, that is my job, that's my goal in the future, is to write that show that really kind of digs into it.
I was gonna say,
yeah, I think you're the person to do it.
I will say, I finished the pilot today. It's called Dating the Zodiac. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, that's it's actually based on sort of when I moved to Chicago and like found myself in an opportunity to kind of be openly poly. I still wanted to date a lot of different people. So I came up with this experiment to date every zodiac sign a month at a time for a year.
Oh my God.
Which
I love that.
Was crazy, but I also had very like strict rules. Like everyone knew that I was dating other people. You could only date for the month that I was dating your sign. So like if I met a Taurus I really liked and, you know, the next season came up and it's like, well, sorry, you guys, we're moving on. Like it's Gemini season now. Sorry. So there it is.
Whoa. And you really did this?
Yeah.
I had like full graphic charts. It was like, I'm really into astrology. So I actually like, it was a little scientific, like instead of dating people during their sun season. So like, you know, right now it's Leo season. I didn't date Leos during Leo season because who wants to like date someone during their birthday month? Like that's gross. Like it just, to me, it was like that forces too much intimacy too quickly.
Too many presents.
Yeah. Too many presents. Like you're going to have like other people in your life being like, happy birthday. So I dated them when Venus was in their sun sign. So when Venus
that's
was
so smart.
Leo, I was like, oh, they'll be like feeling the attraction, they'll be like wanting to date. So this was in 2016, so I think at the time it was like 2 months after that person's sun sign was when I'd be dating them. So like fresh off that birthday glow, I'd be like, hey, I heard you're like a Leo, you want to date or go on? And I would like explain kind of what I was doing. They could give me their full natal chart and I would graph it out in this giant spreadsheet, like literally just being like, Mars is in Sagittarius, their Venus is in this, and I would graph it all out. And then just like kind of keep track of just like the dates, what I thought of them and like with the people I was seeing.
Did you earn a doctorate by the end of this?
No.
I feel like someone should have handed you one. This seems like a very controlled experiment.
I did earn a trip to intensive outpatient therapy.
Congrats.
And, I got a new therapist at the end of it who was just like, yeah, let's talk about this. I would like to. But it was, I don't know, for me, I just wanted to like see what it was like to like kind of date different people and people that I had never dated, like an Aquarius before. And I was like, what's this going to be like? Or is it even going to be like anything different? Or is it just me? Do I suck? Is that the dating issue? But obviously throughout it all, I was poly because I was being very open about like who I was seeing and like telling people. Some of the people from that experiment I do still see, actually.
Nice.
So some good came from it.
I want to know what signs, how they played out.
Oh gosh, that's always people's thing, is like which one was the worst.
Yeah,
I guess on a technicality, the Virgos were the worst, but only because I could not get a Virgo to go out with me when I explained my experiment. Every Virgo was like, I am better than this. This is a mess of a thing. Your charts aren't even organized very well. So every Virgo was just like, no, thank you. So that is, I think, a good sign for them. They just opted out of my bullshit, which I think is on par with Virgos. And then I would say Tauruses surprisingly clicks there. Love Tauruses. They were the ones who kind of made me believe in love and go like, oh, wow, like the universe can be a beautiful place full of people who don't suck and are wonderful.
I love Tauruses.
And then I guess the worst, you know what? I'll do my fair worst answer, which is Sagittarius. I am a Sagittarius. And I will claim that, yeah, we're awful. And
my wife's a Sagittarius and she was my first Sagittarius. And I love it.
We are literally only half human. And I think like we're great when we're around not other Sagittariuses. But when you put us together, we're just like,
yeah,
like what? No, do we fight? Are we into this? Do we run wild together? No, I want to go this way. You do your thing. I don't care. And it's like Sagittarius is so responsive to other energies in your chart. So like a Sagittarius with an Aries moon is going to be so different from like a Sagittarius with a Libra moon. So it's just like, you never know what you're going to get with us. There's just so much variation.
Oh, I just looked it up. My Venus isn't Sagittarius.
So is mine. Have a hard time staying steady. Always looking for the next exciting thing.
Yeah.
Also, we're very messy, apparently, when it comes to our rooms. That's like a big stereotype of
Sagittarius. That checks out.
I used to like eat constantly in my bed. And I feel like there was a period in my life where I would be like, what's the most dangerous food I can eat in my bed? Like, can I eat oysters that I ordered and not spill all over? But that also could be depression.
Yeah. I mean, as someone with depression, I'm like,
yeah, that may not be in the stars. That could just be mental illness.
Yeah, that's a depression thing because my girlfriend does not have her Venus in Sagittarius and is constantly eating in bed. And that's a quarantine habit we are trying to break here.
Just yesterday, I was like, I can balance these tacos on my knee.
So how has quarantine changed everything? And you talk about this a little bit in your article, but a lot of people were making polyamory jokes at the beginning of quarantine who either like were the one person not quarantined with the other two.
Yeah.
Or
or it has been tough. Like, I think kind of even when I wrote that piece, I was like, this is hard, but I at least am in a place where I am thankful to have partners who I'm emotionally connected to and we can FaceTime and it feels really good. And like, you know, we did like distance dates where we'd eat outside, like kind of far apart. But you know, now it's getting to the part where I'm like, oh, I miss the physical part. Like I miss that. And it's very difficult when it's like, obviously if you're going to be poly, you're all adults, you get tested regularly. You keep your partners informed. It's a lot harder when it's like, so do we all like take COVID tests every week? Like make sure that, you know, I am not asymptomatic or, you know, that, you know, your partner isn't going to go see someone who has an immune disease. Like, and then at the end of the day, it's constantly like, it's not worth it.
It's a huge project.
As much as I like love all my partners and want to be with them and want to be able to like cuddle and do everything. It's like, at the end of the day, is this really so worth it for your like primary's grandma to maybe get sick? Like, no, it's not. So, you know.
Yeah. With COVID, it's so much more different than testing for STDs or anything, because it's like the second you walk out of the clinic, you could catch COVID.
You could catch COVID.
So.
I mean, like one of my partners and I, we tried so hard to put a schedule together. Like we were sitting there like, okay, I've been quarantined since this date. And if you were to quarantine until this date, like then maybe 2 weeks from this date, we could see each other. And then if we got tested 2 weeks from that date, and then the protest started and I was like, we're not going to quarantine and miss protests so we can maybe have sex a month from now. Like, no, you can't know. Like,
your kids are like, where were you during the protest? Like, quarantine so I could get laid.
I was quarantining so I could get laid and fuck my third boyfriend, you know?
I was working a Google sheet In bed alone.
Just like bed alone. You know, I was
my
like,
oysters.
Black lives matter, but my black sex life matters.
It does, though. It does. Yeah.
But I mean, at the end of the day, it's just always kind of like, it's not worth it. Like, it will be able to see each other at some point, you know, like, I don't know. For me, it's like, do you wait until there's a vaccine? It's like the whole questions that everyone is like dealing with right now of like, what are you comfortable with? Like, I think eventually, I think we're all going to like find our little bubbles and be able to be like, we feel safe. Like, I'm only seeing these people, or like, I'm still quarantining in this way. So it's just been so much math, and I hate math. So
yeah.
What are your favorite things about solo polyamory, and then your least favorite thing?
My favorite thing, I mean, it really is being alone, honestly. I've always been someone who just kind of values my free time, my alone time, my ability to just kind of like sit and binge 90 episodes of 90 Day Fiancé and just like watch the TV I watch and write the things I have to write. I like to travel when I want to travel. And I like that freedom and like, you know, it's not like a lack of responsibility. You still have responsibilities to your partners, but I don't know. I feel like it means more to them when they know how much it means to me to like do those things for them. Cause they know like, oh, she really is prioritizing me because this bitch really could be doing whatever she wants right now. And I guess my least favorite part, I mean, it just comes back to like the stereotypes and sort of stigmas associated. And I know I said already that a lot of that comes from like cis men who like just can't even believe that a woman would do this. But like a lot of it does come from family. A lot of it does come from like other women who, you know, think that you're lying to yourself or that you don't have self-worth or you don't think that, you know, you're settling for less than you deserve. That's something I run into a lot. Like there'll just be complete strangers who are like, you need to love yourself and you can find a monogamous partner who will give you what you deserve. And I'm just like, what? I have like four partners who give me what I deserve. What are you talking about?
That makes me think too. We've had listeners ask about who are in polyamorous relationships. And for them, the difficult part is coworkers. And I hadn't thought of that. When you have like work parties or coworkers are always like talking a little bit or asking you like, do you have a boyfriend? Do you have a girlfriend?
Yeah.
How do you don't want to talk to them about your polyamory?
I guess like I kind of lucked out because for a lot of it, when I lived in Chicago, I worked at The Onion and I literally like, it was The Onion. Like we would have holiday parties. And I remember just like emailing the front desk girl and being like, hey, can I get like two RSVPs? I don't know which partner I'm bringing. Like, I don't know who I'm like, can you just like give me some spots on the thing? I was just like, I don't know which boyfriend I'm bringing. Like, oh, this is my girlfriend and this is like her partner. It was The Onion. It was very like, everyone was cool with that. Very liberal comedy. Now I work at a tech company. And if any of my coworkers know I'm poly, it is only because they read my articles and don't tell me about it because I don't bring it up. It's not something I've ever wanted to describe in a workplace because they barely understand like me being a queer
a comedian,
gender non-conforming comedian and presenting person. Like they're just kind of like, I barely understand why her pronouns say she, her, they, them in her email. Like trying to explain polyamory to them would be like, I think they, I don't even know. I think they'd just be like, are you a sex slave or something? We don't understand. So luckily I'm one of those people who like I write and do comedy. So like I very much separate my personal life and my day job life. So for me, I don't care. Like I don't even go hang out with my coworkers.
Nice.
But I am like, that's like kind of a privilege I never really considered that I like worked with these crazy weird comedy people who were just like, yeah, we're cool with you bringing like a different person to every single thing all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder, man. Just thinking like holiday parties, how much stuff that drags up to for either like new polyamorous couples or like what if you're somebody who works at one of those companies that really throws a rager for Christmas and then everybody's like trying to get the RSVP.
That actually, I mean, The Onion holiday parties were like famous for being these like big ragers and like my partners would be like, well, who's it going to be? Like what?
Right.
And then if it
wasn't
like a
reality show competing for that.
Or like, I mean, I work in advertising, so I would get to like go to like a lot of happy hours that were sponsored and it would be like, which one are you going to like bring? And I mean, there have been points where I have partners who are chill with all hanging with each other. And I'm like, oh, everybody can come to this. I don't care. But there are times when it's very much like, you're my date to this. Or, I mean, I've also kind of had the reverse issue where someone I'm seeing wants to bring me to their work event, but they have a primary who expects to go, or, you know, something like that. And they're a little like, well, I should be allowed to like bring another partner. So I have like navigated that. And I don't know, I guess my advice would be, oh, don't try to navigate that. Just say no, just opt out. Like this, just...
Yeah.
If someone's primary gets mad, my advice is to just walk away. It's never worth it.
Yeah. And wedding invites too. Now I'm thinking about all the things for you.
Yeah, that is actually, that's a question I like to ask people I go out with when they have primaries is if they're not married or like if they are, I'll just say, okay, let's say our relationship goes well. How would your primary feel about me being at your wedding? Like if I love you and I support you being with this primary, like I was there in full support of your union, how would they actually feel about me being there? And that's like one of those questions where they're just all of a sudden like, oh, I would have to, right. Cause like, if this was a real relationship, you would have to know my friends and my family and you would come to something like that. Oh,
oh, this is real life.
Yeah. Like, oh, right. And you know, sometimes if they're Ben Polly and they're married, they're like, oh, of course you would have been. We had people at our wedding who were partners of ours. Like, yeah, I've run it. And that's like, that's when I'm like, amen, we can do this.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's like, oh, I never even thought of that. Like, no, she probably wouldn't like that. And if that's like what I hear, I'm just like, oh, well then this isn't a thing. Like you're just looking for someone that your partner's okay with you sleeping with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are there any other kind of red flag questions that you put out there?
Yeah, I actually have written in my newsletter one time I did like a huge thing of just like red flags. I think the biggest one is anyone who talks shit about their primary partner.
That's a giant red flag.
And it's one that people don't often think about. I've realized like, you know, if you're hanging out with someone and they're just like, oh, my partner, this, my girlfriend, this, my boyfriend, this, you know, you have to imagine what are they saying about you to this person? Like what, you know, and also like, I do believe a good boundary in any sort of poly relationship is that you get to have privacy with your partner. Even if you have a primary, your primary doesn't get to know everything about my life. That's something that you have to be kind of really upfront about with people, because I've had situations where I'm dating someone and then I talk to, you know, their girlfriend and they know everything about me. And I'm just like, I never said that was okay to share with this person. Like our relationship is ours. So that's a big boundary for me. That's a big red flag, because it's like, if this person is willing to disrespect their main relationship like this with you, they don't care about you. They are just looking to vent about their main partner. That's a big flag.
That's huge.
Yeah. That one, I think another big one is, I guess I could pull the list up I wrote, but I'm going to off the dome from my own horrible experiences. Another big rule that I have is, and this varies kind of, but I do initial dates sober. A lot of people I've noticed who are poly or non-monogamous, they are kind of reliant on drugs and alcohol. I mean, I smoke weed, whatever. If we're on our first date and you want to like smoke a joint, that sounds cool. But like, I would notice this kind of trend of poly people being like, oh, we're going to go to this party. We're all going to get like shit faced. And then maybe we'll have an orgy, or like, oh, you know, like my girl gets like super drunk and then she's cool with me going out with people. And I just was really uncomfortable with sort of the reliance placed on alcohol for people to be poly. I don't think you should have to get drunk to the point of being blackout for you to feel comfortable sleeping with someone other than your main partner. Like, if that's the case, maybe you don't want to actually do this.
Yeah. And then you're not getting your answers to your red flag questions.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not getting answers. Like, I'm just like, oh, clearly, like, you rely on alcohol to make this happen. So this might not be what you really want. So now I like do a rule where like our first date is going to be somewhere where like, you know, we can try to stay sober. Just like, I'll be like, I'd request that we like not get shit faced tonight, which has been a weird one just because people, anytime you say like, oh, I don't want to drink, people are like, are you an alcoholic? Like, oh my God, what's wrong?
Yeah.
But I think like if you're poly and you are sort of following into those like patterns, and that I think is, it also kind of goes along with like the fet life and the poly meetup kind of vibe where it's like very sexy. So people want to drink and do drugs. But you know, like I was dating this couple and it was like every time we'd want to hang out, they couldn't even like just watch a movie in their apartment without being like, we have this much Coke and this much Molly and all this, the fridge is full of alcohol. And I was just like, y'all don't want to just make a salmon dinner and chill? Like, we can't just like, y'all gotta get messed up to feel okay with me just like hanging out in your space. Like, come on, chill out. So that's a flag I have. it varies so much for people. And I think that's kind of like the other rule for me, is that there really is no standard for polyamory. Don't ever let someone tell you this is how polyamory works, or this is what you have to be comfortable to be poly. Don't, like, I think that is a trap a lot of women who want to be poly get into. If it's a thing where like their male partner has introduced them to it, or if it's a situation where it's like you can date women but not, you know, anyone you want, a lot of people get these ideas in their head of, oh, polyamory is this specifically, or if I feel jealous, then I'm not a good poly person, which isn't true. You can be as jealous as you want and be poly. Like, jealousy is healthy and normal. It's about sort of addressing it honestly and bringing it up honestly and talking to your partners about it instead of letting it like fester inside of you and turn into something worse. So, you know, a lot of people I talk to are like, well, you know, my partner said that I'm bad at this because I feel jealous when he goes on dates, or my partner gets more dates than me and I feel bad about it. And that makes me feel like I'm not a good poly person. And it's like, no, those are all fair feelings. Like, yeah, it is frustrating when like someone you're dating gets more dates than you. And that's like an insecurity that you have to really address with yourself. And there is no clear cut answer with how you're going to work through that feeling, but it's a feeling that's legit that you're going to have to work through. And it's not right for some partner or someone else to tell you, oh, well, you're bad at polyamory. Like, this, you're just bad at this. Like, you know,
yeah,
or you're not really poly because you like feel jealousy or have a hard time with this. No, like all of those sort of experiences and finding it are valid. So to me, it's always like, hey, you know, and yeah, I did shit on women who are in open relationships who only can date women. I did. But hey, if that is, you know, where you find your truth and where you find your happiness, to me, there's no wrong way to go about doing that. So
yeah.
Yeah.
But your husband, like, your partner is a misogynist. How are you okay with it?
Right.
Just, well, explore it.
Yeah.
if it comes from the woman, that's like a different thing. If she's like, oh, yeah, I don't want to deal with dating other men,
true,
but like, you know, women is a safe, happy space for me, so I'm just gonna play there.
Yeah. Like, if that is the case, then definitely. But gosh, just don't let anyone else tell you how to be poly. Don't let a partner, right, tell you, oh, you can be poly this way, or to be poly you got to do it this way, or you got to be cool with this. No, being poly doesn't mean you have to say yes to every threesome your partner wants. Like, no, you,
yeah,
group sex is not inherent in polyamory. Like, that's not part of the deal all the time. So I think that is the trap people get into, is that they get with someone who is acting in bad faith, who's using polyamory for their own means, and then disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's such a great piece of advice. And it feels like knowing what your boundaries are and what you're comfortable with and what you want, and having that come first, is so important. Do you ever find yourself wanting to compromise your boundaries for certain people?
Yeah.
Just like we all do sometimes, right? Like, even in monogamous relationships.
Yeah. Like, even in monogamy, you want to believe like, this is who I am. These are like, what, this is what I stand by. And then you meet someone and you're just like, fuck it all. I'll do whatever you want. Like, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, I think being solo poly, like, that progress for me is a bit more staggered. Like, I'm not immediately like head over heels, because like right from the bat, I'm going to be like, these are my boundaries and this is kind of the outline of my relationship. And like, no, we're never going to be in a place where like, I am your one and only and you're my one and only. So like, you know, that kind of helps. But I have had situations where I like kind of have to take a step back and I'm like, this relationship has turned me into someone that I'm not, like, and I think that happens in monogamous relationships. You kind of realize, like,
for sure,
you compromise and compromise and you give and give. And like, you know, it's not always as simple as just like, oh, this person wants me to be monogamous. Like, that is a thing I am willing to compromise on. I'll be monogamous with you for a year, 6 months, 3 months, if that's like what it takes for us to get to know each other. But like, if at the end of that, you're not cool with us going back to something open or kind of realizing who I am, then this isn't going to work long term. I think that is where a lot of people will think, oh, but she'll compromise. Like, if she's willing to be poly for 3 months, then at the end of this, she'll be poly for the rest of her, or she'll be monogamous for the rest of her life with me. It's like, I'm not going to compromise on that. But I mean, things like, I don't know, like, I have had partners where I like, you know, I said I hate like being primary, secondary, but I have had partners who are like, for me, it means a lot for me to call you my secondary, or for me, you know, it helps me to make sense of this if I can think of it this way. And I'll be like, okay, for you, okay, but this is for you. I do not consider myself your second anything. So
yeah.
I learned so much.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, all my questions were answered.
Right. Huh. You're such a great person to talk to us about. And thank you so much for spending the time with us to talk to us and our listeners. I'm sure our listeners are going to really love this conversation and love this episode.
So. Oh, yeah.
I think so. Because there are a lot of misconceptions and questions about it. And it's something a lot of people are interested in. And there is no like one source to find all the right answers.
I will say, Coming Out by Tristan Tormino is a great book to read. I have an autographed copy. It's kind of like, other than The Ethical Slut, which everybody's going to read.
Yeah.
I kind of think Opening Up is a bit better because it really shows you that monogamy and polyamory aren't these sort of set in stone acts. Like if you are a monogamous couple, but you agree like one Saturday every 3 years, you both get a hall pass. That's a form of non-monogamy. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think helping people think of it more that way, like swingers, people who are kind of, you know, engaging in these more alternative lifestyles are also non-monogamous. I think that's a way for people to kind of understand like, oh, this is something that can fit in my life. Or I have been unhappy with like traditional monogamy and maybe there are sort of easier options than becoming full poly and having like 10 boyfriends or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, they're in between steps.
Yeah. I feel like I've just realized weirdly more similarities between poly and monogamous relationships than I expected to through this conversation.
Ultimately
communication.
You know, the monogs, they come at me a lot, but really we're more similar than different.
Yeah.
I love it. Where can people follow you on social media?
At the Ashley Ray on everything. Just theashleyray.com even. Yeah.
It's a great follow. Get on it.
Never a dull moment.
See, we told you she was awesome.
I learned so much, and I'm a little poly curious now.
Shh.
I have to say that quietly. Yes.
You got to whisper that.
I know.
I know Allie's home.
Allie's home, and I'm...
Allie also listens to this podcast. I love her. Most supportive.
Oh my God, that's true.
Most supportive girlfriend.
I mean, curious to learn.
Curious to learn.
Shall we
talk about someone else?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's move on to someone else. This week's listener question. So a few years ago, I met this girl. As time went by, we went through a lot of stuff together, and throughout all our issues, we were in it together, us against the world. She was my best friend, and she was one of the most important people to me in the entire world. Sadly, she just talked to me less and less until one day, altogether. One night, she reached out to me for help. I was really concerned because she had depression and occasional suicidal thoughts, so I did all I could to get in touch with her. I did this for about a month straight, every day, stressing myself out, having panic attacks, and crying from being so worried about her until one day she responds and gives me a text back saying that she didn't have her phone with her. To this day, I try to stay in contact with her because I really thought that we meant something to each other, but now she doesn't talk to me at all, and I find myself still thinking about her. All of that was 5 years ago. Everyone I know says I should just forget about her and move on, but I can't. It just hurts. I'm new at being a lesbian, and honestly, I'm just scared that I will never meet anyone like them. What should I do?
I hope that you never meet anyone like them.
I know.
Again, this person is an emotional terrorist, and for context, our dear sweet listener is 19. So to say all this started 5 years ago means they were 14.
Oh.
And it was actually hard to tell from the email because we did pare it down a little bit. Like, was this even a intimate, like a sexual relationship?
No.
It sounds emotionally intimate.
This is the type of relationship I was referring to in last week's listener question. That is just like an intense, toxic friendship / maybe relationship with everything but the intimacy, physical intimacy.
Yeah. This person, I've seen this play out with friends in intimate relationships where there was somebody who is depressed and will kind of do that, you know, not being in touch and then like reach out and then make you think the worst and like afraid that they're gonna
for a month
kill themselves and make you feel emotionally responsible for this other person's mental health. Yeah. And then for her not to get back to you and say she wasn't by her phone, obviously that was bullshit. That,
yeah, she wasn't by her phone for a month.
Yeah. In this day, like, fuck no. This person is garbage. All of your friends are right. You need to move on and you're saying you can't. You need to cut this out like a cancer. This person is a cancer. Every time you find yourself wanting to think about them, have a plan in place, have a list of things that you can think about instead. And I know that sounds stupid, or have maybe a friend that you call every time you get down this like nostalgic path. But what you're nostalgic for is a very bad thing. You're 19. You have so much of your life ahead of you. You will meet other people.
So many.
Yeah.
New people to meet.
It's not ridiculous or anything that you are hung up on this person. A lot of times, a lot of us get hung up on people who we made like our deepest connections to in our formative years. You know, I spent years hung up on somebody that when I was, you know, 17, 18, felt like we created a bond that I never had with anybody else. And that's really hard to let go, even though it's clear that the other person has moved on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and has let go. And then you try to convince yourself, well, like maybe this or maybe that. But if somebody's into you, they're into you and they let it be known. Or if somebody wants a relationship with you, it's easy. And when it's this hard, it means this person is just there to fuck with you, that you're not, never going to get what you want or what you need or what you deserve, most importantly, from this person. Cut these toxic people out of your life. Move on. Make a list of things to talk about. Have a TV show that you can turn to that makes you happy. When you start thinking about them, go watch an episode or something to get your mind off. There are lots of things that you can do to just kind of train your brain to stop thinking about it. I don't know. What do you think, Melody?
I mean, you said it all, Carolyn. Just ticking off anything I was going to contribute as you were talking.
I mean, this one triggered me maybe a little
bit.
Yeah,
clearly you're a little red. I'm not kidding. You're a little red right now.
I just feel bad. I feel that this listener sounds super
this
sweet.
This is an emotional, you know, vampire. We're watching, yeah, someone being tricked by an emotional vampire. You were concerned about her mental health to the point where you were having panic attacks and crying from being so worried. It's now your mental health that you should be concerned with. You should not be having panic attacks over a friend that you set out to comfort. You know, this person has some demons and you don't need the residual demons from this person.
Exactly. Well, if you have a question, you can send it to us, dykingout@gmail.com. And if you're a patron, make sure you mention that, because then your questions go to the top of the list. Or if you have a question you need answered right away, you can go to wisio.com, wisio.com/dykingout for a more personalized response. You can follow us at Dyking Out on all the social medias, on TikTok, even though we have nothing there yet, but don't you want to be there when we do? Don't you want to be there on the ground level for Dyking Out TikTok at Dyking Out Pod? And if you can find whoever has at Dyking Out, tell them what they're doing is wrong and they need to hand that over. You can follow me at TGI Carolyn.
You can follow me at Melody Kamali.
And dyke out with us again next week.
Be kind to one another.
Bye.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.